Jonathan Tannenwald from the Philadelphia Inquirer, who writes about all things soccer in the country south of us. Jonathan, thank you for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Perry. I had to stretch that tin can and string an awfully long way to reach you guys.
Well, there it is.
Great to talk to you.
Yeah, it is nice to talk to you, and we do see you in our fair city quite a bit. Won't see you for the 2026 World Cup. We'll get into that a little bit because I'm sure you have some opinions on that.
Maybe.
I don't think you were surprised by this. Is it a positive or is there a negative that we can find in this signing that Zlatan's coming to the league?
Well, which do you want first, the bad news or the good news?
Well, I'm glad you got two opinions. Let's start with the good news.
Look, the good news is it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's that simple. It's a player that, you know, so many people in MLS have wanted to see here for so long, and it's been an open secret that, you know, teams in MLS have wanted him, and people have been fairly certain that he's wanted to come here, and it's finally going to be done. And it's, you know, the bad news is that, you know, he's 36, I think, thereabouts.
37, yeah.
And, you know, he's old generally. You don't know how long it's going to be for, that he's going to be here. And if you're trying to dispel the image of MLS as a retirement league, this is not going to help. But at the same time, you've got all the young South Americans who have come into the league who are terrific players. And it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You're not going to say no. Just like if the time comes, you're not going to say no to Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. It's that caliber of player and that caliber of star. And now the big question is going to be, you know, is he going to play in Vancouver on the artificial surface? Is he going to come all the way across the country when they come to Philadelphia in July? Or is he just going to play a couple of home games? And, you know, how is Iggy Schmidt going to manage him?
And that's fair. That's a fair question. I know a lot of fans here in Vancouver have wondered with the Thierry Henry never actually playing at BC Place Stadium, whether they're actually going to be able to see these players. Now, if you look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic specifically, he's got he's coming off a torn meniscus and a ligament injury. How much is actually left in the tank with this guy?
I have no idea. I don't think any of us know for sure. You'd hope that he's motivated to go out and play. You know, that certainly is going to be part of it. I mean, the model in quotes, you know, the path to follow. You look at what Bastian Schweinsteiger has done in Chicago, and you hope that that's what he's able to do in Los Angeles, but we'll see. And by the way, I should also mention, you know what his first game might be? March 31st against LAFC at the StubHub Center.
Yeah, we were saying that. I mean, as much as we would love to see him here in 2 days in Vancouver, that's not going to happen. But Jonathan, here's my thought. You mentioned Schweinsteiger, Pirlo, when he went to New York. David Villa continues. So as much as we don't want this to be a retirement league, the league and the guys who have come over here for the last 3 or 4 years have actually, you know, have helped out, have continued to push a little bit. And to your point, and we just watched the Whitecaps play Atlanta last week, there are some really young, talented stars. So the North American Soccer League model from 30 years ago, when you're bringing all the retirement guys in, to me, I think they've done a pretty nice job of juggling young stars with potential, old stars who actually are still working. Don't you agree?
I do. And look, Villa was a little younger when he came over than Ibrahimovic. And Villa might end up going down as the greatest designated player in MLS history. You look at the goals he's scored, the cachet he's brought to NYCFC. And then I lost track of your question, Perry. I apologize. Here we are on live radio, and I blew it. That's my fault.
It's like you were hit with an Apollo Creed right hand right on the Philadelphia Library steps, and you couldn't figure it out. No, I just think, Jonathan, what I was saying is yeah, Villa's helped out, and as much as there's concern about this becoming a retirement league, there's really no track record to prove that over the last 3 years with the guys who have come out and played here.
I think that's right. And, you know, I haven't been the biggest fan of Pirlo. It was a lot of money for not a lot of games. But, look, I think on the average, when you measure, you sort of got Steven Gerrard and Andrea Pirlo on one side and David Villa and Bastian Schweinsteiger on the other. And, look, even by the Frank Lampard, who I was not a fan of New York City FC either. That might be my own personal opinion of Chelsea getting in the way a little bit, but nonetheless. Look, he ended up making some important contributions, you know, in New York before all was said and done. So, no, I've always bristled at the retirement league moniker. I know I'm not alone. And, you know, I had people say to me when I wrote some of my season preview stories, and one of them was about how many young South American players there are in the league who've come in this year who are attacking players and creative players and really fun players to watch. And I had people who said to me, I've never heard of them. Why should I tune in to watch these guys I've never heard of before? You know, but if my team goes out and signs a European player I've heard of, I'll watch. I said, give these guys a shot, and you might find yourself to be really entertained, and they'll become stars in this league, and they'll become, you know, bigger names, and then the MLS teams are going to sell them for a couple million dollars down the road, become even better.
Yeah, that's a fair point. He is Jonathan Tannenwald, Philadelphia Inquirer, joins us on Point. Perry Selkowski along with Randeep Janda.
Jonathan, you know, I'm pretty critical when it comes to the retirement league label itself. But if you look at this move and from a marketing point of view, you know, Steven Gerrard came over, you had Robbie Keane and all these big names. But there's very seldom that a personality like this makes it over to the MLS. And the only other guy you could probably say that could rival it was Beckham, not because he had as a big personality, but what he brought with him. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, do you think he's going to get people that maybe casually follow soccer right now or maybe don't to kind of gravitate towards MLS just with his personality? The guy is arrogant and people love it.
I would hope so. I think a lot of people would hope so, and that's part of why you sign him at this age and with his injuries and everything else. And then, you know, the question that I'm going to have is what else are they going to see? You know, if he makes his debut against the Galaxy, and it's all the hype and everything, and then LAFC goes out, wins 3-1, and Diego Rossi scores twice and Carlos Vela scores once, well, guess what's going to happen? Everybody's going to see that Diego Rossi's a really good player and Carlos Vela's a really good player. And I'm not going to say this is what MLS wants because, you know, they just want a lot of people to watch on TV and they want a good game. I don't blame them for that. But, you know, if you're the rest of us, then yeah, you want people to maybe be pulled in by Ibrahimovic, but then see a Rossi or an Ezequiel Barco or a Miguel Almiron or a Joseph Martinez or even an Alfonso Davies.
Do you, in your position, Jonathan? I mean, I've met you several times. I've been lucky to travel with the league and go to most places in North America. We had different access from a TV standpoint. But when you bring these big stars in, they need to be accessible so their story can be told. They can do the interviews with the Philadelphia Inquirer and have that. Have you had good access, and does Major League Soccer still have to use these stars in a better light to spread the word than they have in the past 4 or 5 years?
I might be a bad example. Because I've been doing this for long enough that usually if I make a phone call, I can get away with getting an interview with somebody. Look, I think that for the most part, the big names who have come over, especially the big American names that have come over, they get it. You know, the Michael Bradleys and the Jozy Altidores, they get it. Alejandro Bedoya in Philadelphia, he gets it. He's been very open and very accessible. He always speaks his mind anyway, so it's not a problem. Some of the European guys, it's definitely very different. And, you know, I've seen guys who've come over and they, you know, it's their first post game and the locker room's open and here comes the media into the locker room and they've never dealt with that before. So it can be a little different for them. You hope that they're willing to be open. Villa has certainly been very willing to be open. Schweinsteiger has been very willing to be open. Couldn't tell you a thing about Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I have no idea, and I guess we're all going to find out together, aren't we?
That's correct. And, you know, this team here in Vancouver has been making the headlines for, you know, first couple of weeks. It was great, couple of wins. But this past weekend against Atlanta, there was some video review debacle that had Kendall Waston sent off early in that matchup. What did you make of that? Do you think this is the right system that the MLS has started? After a five-minute review, Waston was sent off, and it pretty much killed the game right after that.
All right, the five-minute review I have a problem with. But having VAR I don't have a problem with, and I know this is going to get me in some hot water with your listenership, I don't have a problem with the red card.
Really?
I don't. I saw Waston's elbow go up into Gonzalez Perez's head.
Did he know he was there, though?
Yeah. Yes. I think the referee would say to the player and would say to a lot of – and there's a lot of layers to it. But I think the referee would say to the player, jump up and keep your arms down, and you just stayed on the field. Look, it's a tough one, and Waston's a tough one because he's so much taller than a lot of other guys on the field. Abby Wambach, who's another player that I know a lot of folks up there don't like, used to get called for fouls all the time that were barely of her own making because she was just a bigger and de facto more physical player than whoever she was jumping up, you know, to contest a header with. And, you know, she'd get called for the foul even when she didn't really commit a foul. And the referees had to adjust to that. On the principle of VAR, I think that there's a genuine desire. Look, we see it in hockey. We see it in football. We see it in baseball. And, you know, I cover basketball. I see it in basketball all the time. We want the call to be right. And most of the time it is right. Sometimes it's not, and we complain. But as I said, I think the biggest problem was with the fact that the review took 5 minutes. It shouldn't have taken 5 minutes. And I'm not saying I want to clock on it. But I've gotten to know some of the referees and the people at Pro over the last year or so as they've brought the VAR system into the league. And they're smart enough people in that room that they're going to step back and say, hey, look, let's have this make sense. Let's not take 5 minutes to do a review. Have a look at it. If it's clear evidence, make a call. If it's not clear evidence, leave it, which is what they're supposed to do.
The five-minute review might be what some in our city think the province took to look at the World Cup possibilities in 2026, but I side differently. Yeah. Give me your take. You follow the U.S. national team all the time. You've been up here for all the international games that have taken place in Canada. You see, you know, U.S. soccer is in Chicago and has bailed on this. What is your take on what has happened with some key North American cities pulling out of being a host for North America if they get it?
Well, I don't think anybody objects to the principle that is at play here, which is that FIFA is, you know, extorts all the cities and the countries in the world to try to get the World Cup, you know, to try to get somebody else to pay for the World Cup instead of themselves. Nobody likes that. But here's the factors that are at play to me. The first of which is, and the biggest of which to me is, and I had this conversation with somebody at the Tourism Bureau here in Philadelphia who's been working on the World Cup bid. They believe, and I think they're right, that they can get a lot of private financing to deal with, say, sponsoring the fan zones and helping out with, you know, a little bit of transportation infrastructure, putting up the videos, you know, the advertising and the stuff in town. Obviously, security, who knows how much money that's going to cost. That's going to be a problem. But I look at Vancouver and the amount of financial capital that's in Vancouver, and I sort of think that there should have been some smart enough people to try to figure out how to privately finance some of these things, as is expected to be done in a lot of places in the U.S. Los Angeles almost backed out, and that would have been an enormous black eye, even bigger than Vancouver or Chicago, but they had some private financing entities that got together with the city and said, hey, we can do this. And so they're going to do it, and they should do it, because L.A., you know, they hosted the final in 94. They're going to have three stadiums out there by 2026. And, you know, you couldn't, really. Could you have a World Cup in the United States without Los Angeles? You know? But here's the other thing. And I was very fortunate back in 2015, before I came up for the World Cup, it so happened that the Union were in Vancouver about a month or two prior. And I went out for that game and also to do a little bit of advance work on talking to some of the organizers out there. And I met with the councilor, Andrea Reimer, who I know is still very influential in local politics. And I know how much of a soccer fan she is, and Gregor Robertson and a lot of other people out there. Am I right, Perry, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that a lot of the city officials said yes on this? They needed to get some help from the province financially, and the province said no. That's what I read in the papers out there.
The city did put their support behind it, and it was the province who runs the building that kiboshed it.
Well, and a lot of folks down here in the U.S. sent their sympathies on that part, because whether it's Philadelphia and Pennsylvania or Chicago and Illinois or all over the place, the time you find the city wants to do something and the state house says no. So you have my sympathies on that. But I'm lucky to have been to Vancouver many times. I love the city, as you guys know, and some of your listeners who know me well know. It's amazing to me that they couldn't figure this out. And again, I don't fault them for the principle of it, but I just feel like there could have been a way, and maybe if they brought it to the table more than a day or whatever it was before it was due, they would have found a way.
Jonathan, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it. We'll do it again at some point.
It's always my pleasure, fellas.
All right, there's Jonathan Tenwall. He lives and breathes soccer, following the national teams of the U.S., especially the women's team as they geared up to 2015.